This is Iconic.
Welcome to Iconic, where we talk about all things 13th age. I'm your host, JM, and with me as always are Nick and Becca and Mark.
Hey!
Hello!
Howdy!
We have a great show for you this week, but before we get into it, Nick, do we have new patrons?
We do. We had a couple of new patrons join our team on this last little bit. Alyssa and Natasha both joined our patronage. And then John and Phantom of Truth both increased to the D50 tier, which is absolutely fantastic. It's been fun getting to know them a little bit more, especially during our monthly Iconic games as we explore the world of the Dark Eye.
Yes, I've been hearing great things about that. And so, Alyssa and Natasha, welcome to the Iconic family. John and Phantom, thank you so much for jumping up there. So we are doing that Iconic look. It's been a while since we've done one of those. And this week we are looking at the Emperor. So when we do that Iconic look, basically we're going to be looking at one of the main icons of 13th Age with a look towards making that icon the focus of a full campaign. Just giving you some ideas, some thoughts, some discussions about the icon, what monsters we would use, kind of what our ideas for different campaigns are. And so let's just talk about the Emperor. Now, as it's set up, the Emperor is kind of this force of law, right? The First Age starts when the first Dragon Emperor slays the Wizard King and establishes the Dragon Empire. And there's always been an Emperor, but if you've listened to our Book of Ages review, the Emperor has not always been a force for, let's call it, good. In fact, when we talk in 2 weeks, we're going to talk about the Crown of Axis adventure, the new adventure by Wade Rocket, which leans very heavily into the idea of that there was an age of the terrible Emperor. But he's sort of the linchpin, the top of the hierarchy in the Dragon Empire. Like, everything kind of flows down from him. There seems to be, and maybe this is just JM reading a lot into it, like a link that if the Emperor is good, the Empire is good. And if the Emperor is healthy, the Empire is healthy. And as that kind of breaks down, you might have like a Fisher King sort of play out from there. But he's the commander of the good dragons. The good dragons live in Axis, or a lot of them do. He's thus the head of the Imperial Authority. I tend to see him somewhere between lawful good and lawful neutral as he's presented in the book. How do you guys sort of view him, like, default? What are your thoughts on the Emperor kind of as he's presented in the 13th Age core book?
Well, in the grid in the core book that talks about the different alignments of the different icons, he is kind of placed right there between the lawful good and the lawful neutral categories. And I think that is how he's depicted. I would think it would be interesting to see him swing toward more of a chaotic good, the more of a I'll do whatever it takes to do what I think is right, and have that kind of be more of a harsher rule to hold a grasp onto civilization. The Emperor really, to me, does seem to be the embodiment of civilization in the Dragon Empire. And I agree with you, JM, having the Axis and the Empire kind of be the thermometer, if you will, for how the rest of everything else is going on in the Dragon Empire would be what I would do with it as well. And I think that's even mentioned in one of the call-out sections in the core book as well. But there is this societal glue keeping all of civilization together and making sure that it's all civil. And the Emperor is really the figurehead or the catalyst in that glue. Without that Emperor, the Dragon Empire as we know it really would collapse. So there's a lot of hooks and a lot of ways we could leverage the Emperor as a part of an iconic campaign arc.
For myself, when I think about the Emperor, I usually don't pick him as one of the iconic connections for my own characters. And I think it's because I see him as the lawful, bastion of civilization. And I think I prefer to play characters a bit more wild than that. And so if you want someone like the Sheriff of Nottingham, who's going to follow the rules and perhaps take his own cut, like, that would be someone I associate with the Emperor. Whereas that chaotic good is too much of a Robin Hood and willing to undermine civilization. I don't think the Emperor could undermine his own civilization. So I don't actually ever see him going chaotic, opposed to Nick, just because he is the symbol of civilization. And when he is set up against the Orc Lord or one of the other icons. I mean, it is essentially the Orc Lord, the wild, the crazy, the barbaric, versus the Emperor, the civilization, the bastion of all that is lawful.
I definitely see him more of the lawful neutral, and the ends justifies the means. It's more law and order, and you need to toe the line. I mean, just look at page 19 of the core book of his portrait. That's not a benevolent ruler. He looks quite stern, reddish tinge to his eyes. And it might just be the picture because there's a lot of red gems, which, I don't know, that's just kind of a more of a Ming the Merciless ruler type look to me. But hey, he keeps things running smoothly, and most people are pretty happy. They want to just move on with their life as long as things are lawful. There's a lot of other icons. I definitely can see this as, you know, as a good campaign, because there's a lot of icons who don't see it that way. I mean, the High Druid, this is law and order. No, nature must just go. And, you know, as Becca said, the Orc Lord, that's an easy one.
It sounds like you're more interested in the Emperor as a foil to the icons you want to be tied to, as opposed to be an icon that you wish to be tied to.
That's usually how I play my characters, in just, maybe I'm just rebelling against all the law and order in my own life. But yeah, a lot of my characters that I play prefer to not have to toe the line, and so would see the Emperor as the foil. Maybe I don't necessarily agree with the Orc Lord's decisions, but everything neat and tidy and in its own box can get really boring really fast. So maybe I would align a bit more with the High Druid.
All right.
That's interesting, because I think I've probably had the Emperor as one of my icons in most, if not all, of the characters that I've made. And maybe it's because, maybe personally, I like he's a less wild character. But I think one of my rationales behind choosing that is that there's always going to be, you know, as we journey around the Dragon Empire and are needing help anywhere along the way, there's always going to be some city or form of civilization somewhere that could be able to be leveraged through the icon relationship with the Emperor. And I love using the Emperor as one of my icons. There's always something that you can grab with it.
Well, and it was interesting, the last 13th Age game I ran, you guys all took conflicted relationships with the Emperor, because we were out in Knee Deep, and it became just far enough outside the Dragon, like the proper Dragon Empire, that most people just saw the Emperor as the guy who sends tax collectors to take money from us each year, and screw that guy. So it was interesting, because we were on the borderlands. There was a shift from the rule of law was something far away, and actually just as an imposition on us. We just want to kind of govern ourselves, speaking into Becca's kind of very chaotic nature as a person, not as a player. So each icon has a area that is kind of the nexus of their power, the source of their identity. And for the Emperor, that's Axis. And you may be wondering why we chose the Emperor. Well, we're going to be reviewing Crown of Axis, which is a starter adventure in 2 weeks. And so it kind of made sense to tie these two things together. Now, Axis is again the Imperial capital. There's a lot of cool things in Axis, the districts, the fact that it's in a dormant volcano, and the good dragons kind of line the top of the volcano. It really, in some ways, it feels very much like Melniboné to me, Mark, like with the idea that you have the emperors and then the dragons that are associated with the emperors, and sometimes they're sleeping and sometimes the emperor can call them awake, but they seem to be in this period of lethargy. Anything stand out about Axis? Why would you want to set a thing in Axis? Go ahead, Mark.
Well, to emphasize my point, page 116 in 13 True Ways, Rabble Ward. When the population grows too dense, soldiers sweep through and torch the place, sending residents fleeing onto the open road and sea. The wards that keep the fire from spreading to the valuable parts of the city haven't failed in recent memory. Again, not a benevolent ruler.
So you really see him as much more of the... maybe not the four good emperors, but not like Caligula or
Nero,
but somewhere in like the Vespasian, like, well, I'm sorry, there's a rebellion, time to crush it brutally.
Well, as you do.
Yeah. All right. Well, what stood out about Axis for you guys? What is one feature of Axis that you're like, this is what I would make an Emperor-focused campaign, the one thing I would want to stress?
For me, it would have to be all of the gladiatorial focus and the combats that take place there, both as a way of testing the player's mettle and having them maybe even realize that as much as they are heroes in the Dragon Empire, there's still others who may be above them. There was a side note in 13 True Ways about the city of Axis being a sort of thermostat for the Empire. And I probably would leverage Axis for that, bring the PCs back to Axis again and again, and have them get an understanding of how the rest of the world is faring based on how Axis is faring. But then also have it be a thermostat for how powerful or how advanced the players themselves are, or the characters themselves are advancing as they go through the tiers, and have the initial gladiatorial combats that they engage in be very challenging, and they don't succeed all the time, or they barely succeed. And then by the time they get into the epic tier, they're the ones that everybody is trying to judge themselves up against. So I really would use Axis as that thermostat, that measuring stick for the entire Dragon Empire and for the PCs themselves.
I like that. I mean, that ties in a little bit to my idea of using the Emperor as kind of the barometer for how well the Dragon Empire is doing, like this as above, so below kind of concept.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's for, like I said, they start and they can only get a hovel and rabble ward. And then as they gain experience and money, suddenly they can live an upside and they're rubbing shoulders with the hoity-toity. And the stratification in Axis allows them to kind of visually show their progression from the peasant hero who goes out and slays the goblins to suddenly you're riding dragons on missions for the Emperor. And oh, look here, you can have the old residence that I don't need anymore in upside and move up the ladder.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
I think Axis, because yeah, out in knee deep, boo, Emperor, tax collectors, grr, arg, go away. That's only one side that the common people would see. Whereas if you're in Axis, you get to see every single level.
Yeah. For me, it's definitely the idea that the dragons are there. For me, there's this symbolic link between the dragons kind of being over the palace of the Emperor, who sits at the top of the Dragon Empire. And there's sort of this link between the overworld and the Dragon Empire, almost like as long as the good dragons are there, there's some sort of like blessing upon the Dragon Empire. But if they were to ever leave, that would be a sign that the overworld has kind of turns its sight away from the Dragon Empire. And that's kind of where I'm headed with my campaign arc. So I will stop there.
One of the things that I was going to explore, and you'll see later when we talk about some things and kind of our campaign, is why are the dragons so loyal to the Emperor? Why are they there?
Following this, it just sparked an idea of, with political intrigue, dragon's blessings or the worm blessings upon the Emperor. What if there is an heir to the throne and the dragons determine that is a better emperor than the current one, but not all the dragons do? And then you've got infighting amongst dragons.
That reminds me of the old second edition campaign box, Council of Worms. Right. That was the focus of a whole campaign where you played as dragons and did the political machinations. That would be a fun sort of, like, maybe when the adventurers get to champion tier. Now I'm jumping ahead because you've got my brain juices flowing. Pause and say, cool, you're on the threshold of epic tier. For the next two or three adventures, here are dragons. We're going to cut away to like the Dragon Council having this discussion. And then at the end of it, one of the dragons that the PCs is playing goes to the epic tier adventurers and says, here's what we've decided. We want you to be the people to kind of do this and let you guys actually have the machinations in dragon form, maybe do a couple adventures in dragon form, and then bring the focus back to the PCs. All right. So when you think of the Emperor, what are the icons that Becca's going to pick for her character? The classic foils to this imperial throne and character.
Well, you should know that when we play this campaign, I am probably going to play some sort of crazy druid who's here to break apart the established order of Axis and the Emperor, who follows the High Druid, because chaos, man, it's where it lives. Also, even though they're not a foil, if you're going to be playing in this, you got to have some sort of link to the Great Gold Worm. Because he's usually an ally of the Emperor, but if he or it isn't as set on this current Emperor being the best one for the job, you could kind of have an undermining Great Gold Worm, which really twists the whole tropes that you have set in place.
Now you've given me another idea. Yes. What if the reason the Emperor and the Metallic Dragons are so closely aligned is that the first Emperor and the Great Gold Worm, like, we have this giant mural of the Great Gold Worm with the first Emperor fighting the Wizard King. And when the Great Gold Worm went to sacrifice himself for the Abyss, that sort of dragon riding pair is still why the Metallic Dragons are linked to the Emperor.
I have a slightly different take on that. And my reason that the dragons back, all the other good Metallic Dragons back the Emperor, is way back when a couple of guys got together to take down the Wizard King, the Great Gold Worm was tricked into where he's at now. And he's actually the benevolent ruler, realizes he's been tricked, can't leave because he understands what will happen, and has tasked his Metallic Dragons to watch over the Empire because he doesn't want his sacrifice to go and be a waste. So if you're a follower, maybe you uncover that this was a setup to get rid of him and stick him there.
I like it. Nick, what about you? Like, what do you see Icon kind of interacting?
Well, as I think about the Emperor being kind of the glue of civilization, I would see any of the other icons. I'd try to figure out how might they be a sort of a solvent to that glue and dissolve it in some way. Thinking about the wars in the north with the Orc Lord, wearing people down enough that they're willing to surrender to the Orc Lord. Maybe magic's being discovered to lay claim to the sentient but slumbering old wall and having that rise up. I do really like the connection that we're talking about between the Great Gold Worm and the other Metallic Dragons in the Dragon Empire, and having there be a link or connection there. And if something doesn't happen quite right, or if something goes south with the Great Gold Worm, then having all of those dragons who are overseeing, whether it be symbolically or realistically, overseeing everything that's going on inside the city of Axis, suddenly just on a whim, and snap of fingers, just descend upon the city and lay claim to it. The High Druid, I think, is an interesting one to pit against the Emperor, because you have the glue of civilization and the antithesis of that, the wanting to go back to the natural world again. I also would, again, with this draconic theme, I would be keen to draw the three into any sort of campaign with this. They are existing as, especially in Drakenhall, they're existing as that monstrous city that's somehow a part of civilization. You know, one of them is partly under a spell to keep everything down. There's agreements that have been made. The Green is locked away with the Elf Queen. And I would really want to see how the three could be, their motives may leverage the fall of the Emperor, or either from within or from without. If they could break free somehow, and if they could strike a pact with the Great Gold Worm. I'm getting into my campaign arc.
Yeah, no, that's fair. But that is interesting in the fact that, like, typically, dragons are the physical representation of chaos in a setting or in a story. And so the fact that somehow someone either tricked the three or allowed the three to be part of the Order of the Empire, like, that's a corruption that's kind of eating away at the stability of the Dragon Empire. Now, the true danger that's listed in the book is everything will be all right as long as the Emperor stands stalwart between civilization and chaos. Now, Nick likes the idea of a chaotic Emperor, so I feel like that's the true danger just kind of manifested. And Becca's basically the thing that the Emperor has to stand stalwart against. How would you keep this in mind for a campaign, but maybe represent it in a different way. I know that when we cover Crown of Axis, we're actually going to see this is like Crown of Axis would be a great campaign seed for any of these things we're talking about, because it involves icons trying to do something to the soul of the Emperor. And we're going to be pretty vague about that, but
spoiler alert.
I feel like we need a red flashing something. All right. So how do you view that true danger? How would you use it? Or how would you maybe shift the Emperor in a way to shift this true danger and maybe make it more present, maybe make it more something that the heroes have to deal with now, as opposed to at the end of the age?
Well, I had to go with my story. The secret comes out about the great gold worm, or the Emperor stands stalwart to protect civilization. But what happens if the great gold worm is failing? Maybe all the dragons leave to go help, and now the Emperor doesn't have that backing, or something happens that the chaos breaks out that he can't control. That would not be a good thing.
As I think about the Emperor and the Empire sliding more toward the chaotic spectrum, it seems to me that the natural thing that would follow would be a pretty significant civil war, that there it would be a fracturing that would take place. And maybe there would be someone trying to rise up and be the sole emperor again, and ruling just with an iron fist and saying, might makes right, and I'm going to rule because I can make you. But at the same time, would be really interesting to see what other sorts of smaller empires may arise out of that civil war. They probably would have different iconic alignments, but as exploring that with players in a campaign, it'd be interesting to see what other empires might come out of that, and how might the relationship between them end up being.
I would jump on that civil war idea, especially if you've been doing a political intrigue, discovered a lost heir of the Empire, and then it would be the heir versus the current emperor. You'd have to go in treaties with the other icons to see who's on your side and who's on his side, and whichever his you're on. And in that, you would have to convince, for example, the icon of the Elf Queen that the current emperor either is still that bastion of civilization holding back the chaos of the Orc Lord, or convince her that he's failing and he isn't as strong as he projects, but this guy over here will be. If the true danger is that the Emperor is the last standing wall, you would have to determine whether or not he is still standing strong, or if he's falling to the ground.
Mm-hmm. So what if the Elf Queen's behind that political machination, with her leverage over the three to spread the rumors that this is the true heir?
Well, let's jump right into our campaign arcs, because we're all very excited about them. I can very clearly see that. So if you guys don't mind, I'll go first. My idea was, it may come as a shock to some of you that I'm a huge Tolkien fan. So my idea was for like the adventurer tier is this rise of the dragons are like, I'm going to lean into Elric and Tolkien today, which is just bizarre in my head, but it makes sense for this campaign. The dragons are starting to fall asleep. Like the Imperial dragons are not as responsive. People are starting to worry. Does this mean that the overworld's blessing is no longer on the dragon emperor? And what the heroes would discover is that there's also a rise in a bunch of the priests who are keeping the Lich King at bay, right? Like that's part of the Lich King's icon, is that as long as the priests are doing what they're supposed to. So it looks like there's this increase in vigilance and making sure the Lich King is sort of sent away. And the champion arc would be what we've discovered is the current dragon emperor is dying and doesn't want to. And so his priests have actually been going out learning necromancy in order to extend the dragon emperor's life. And he is slowly slipping from lawful neutral into lawful evil. And the heroes, contacted by whatever icons they're in, have to find a way to enact a ritual to awaken the dragons who will then make a like a judgment on the Dragon Empire. Players shift and get to play the dragons for a bit, and then they come back to the epic tier and say, hey, here's how you got to set it right. You have to either kill the emperor or find the heir, or if you don't do what we want, that's fine, that's up to you, but we're gonna leave. Like, and at that point, what happens to the Dragon Empire if the person who's supposed to be the shield has become essentially a new wizard king or a new lich king, and there's an alliance between the emperor and the lich king, and the heroes at epic tier have to either slay and replace the icons or rally, find an heir and rally around them. That's kind of my idea for the three arcs, and I'm very excited and want to run this game now. Any thoughts, or do you guys want to jump into yours?
I like the idea of the whole dragons falling asleep. So they haven't abandoned the emperor, but they're going to sleep, and why? And that would definitely, I would think, get the attention of all the icons. And you have to spread that. Are the chromatics also going to sleep? So are all dragons going to sleep? So what's going on? Yeah. I'm kind of spreading all the dragons, not because otherwise you'd have one faction down, the other like, hey, we have free reign. But I'd talk like all the dragons are falling asleep. Like, okay, what's going on? That would really get everyone's attention.
Yeah, I was thinking it would just be the Metallics or the Imperial Metallics, because then it would be like, ooh, now the three in Drakenhall, they would be like, excellent. The balance of power has shifted very strongly in our favor. And maybe even bring up the fact that the reason that the Dragon Emperor is like this is maybe the blue has been slowly corrupting him through that link that lets her be a part of the Empire. Becca, what about yours? Let's jump into your idea.
I like a lot of where your brain is going, and could probably use a lot of your ideas in my own, you know, blatantly steal, as it were. And I would focus on like that political intrigue of, as like the adventurer tier, you are in Axis and you are moving up from the rebelhood into the higher levels, either through your gladiatorial fights or because of missions that you are sent on. And as you do so, you see the disparity between the poor and the wealthy, the influential and those that are refugees, perhaps. And you would find out towards the end of your adventuring levels that there is another possible emperor, whether that's an heir directly from the current emperor, or if the dragons have created or found someone else who could be the new emperor. And you would determine which side you would be on, whether it is the emperor side, because he's the true emperor, or this heir, because he can do it better. And then in champion level, you go to the dragons, asking them to ally with you for whichever side you are on, and then travel through and talk to the other icons, maybe not directly because you're only at champion level, but they're champions, and convince them to join your side or insult them enough to get them to join the other side. And so champion level is that, like, you're talking to the greater part of the empire. And then when you get to your epic tier, you are actually involved in the civil war. And so all the allies you've gotten are now on your side, and all the enemies you've made are obviously against you. And that kind of bounces over to Nick's idea of, when the fallout happens, what other empires have been created? Who else is left? And is this really the best? And so maybe like the Civil War ends and you go to level 10, your final level, and you have to figure out if what you did was actually the best thing. And so it's like the 10th level, are you doubling down and saying, yep, we did the right thing, or going, oops, quick, let's fix it. So yeah, that's, I think, where I would go with that.
I like all of the political involvement that you've kind of depicted there as well, the inner machinations that are taking place. For my campaign arc, I was starting with the premise that the emperor's control over the empire was fraying. And so the player characters would be, for that initial adventurer tier, be sent off doing a number of different tasks to try to kind of regain that sense of control, that reestablish, rebolster civilization in different parts of the empire. Certainly along the way, emphasizing the fact that the emperor isn't as in charge as he might like to think he is. And I would end the adventurer tier with the player characters in Drakenhall when the three escape their confines. they break off the spells, they consolidate their forces, and they rise up in a very obvious insurrection. And then for the champion tier, that would segue and I would fast forward a year in game time to where the three have laid claim to much of the Dragon Empire and have even convinced several of our metallic dragon forces to join them as well. And probably I would have a couple of the metallic colors remaining true. So the gold, silver, and coppers probably still remaining true to the Emperor and to the Empire, but have their allegiance be wavering. And perhaps if the PCs could intervene in some way and be willing to find and return a long-lost artifact or something along those lines, these metallics could be convinced to step in and curb the other metallics as they are falling under the sway of the three, as well as maybe assisting in subduing the three again. So I'd have that tier be spent tracking down this artifact, specifically racing against a number of other iconic involvements to get it, and end up getting the Dragon's Allegiance first. I would also kind of maybe balance that effort against the fact that there is a civil war taking place with the three on one side and the Emperor on the other side. And I would end this tier with an epic showdown between the icons and the iconic forces, specifically the Emperor versus the three, and resulting in the Emperor being slain. So then the epic tier, I would have the PCs really need to rally the other iconic involvement to put a stop to the three for good and establish a new Emperor, a consolidated one for the good of everyone. So they'd be spending their time convincing and maybe even cajoling the other icons into helping and separating the three and slaying the three individually. And once they're dead and the war won, it's time to name a new Emperor and usher in a new age.
I like it. I like it a lot. And I feel like tune in 2 weeks when we cover the Crown of Axis, which would be a great start to any of these campaign ideas. Any final thoughts before we wrap this episode up?
You need to decide, is civilization really worth giving up all of your freedom and your autonomy and your money? Or is the wild really where we should all be?
Thank you for that infomercial for... do you have a time to talk about the High Druid?
Yes. Let me into your home. We shall talk about this.
For only one gold piece a day, you can help the High Druid. All right. Well, we will be back in 2 weeks for more iconic podcasts. Thank you all for listening. We will be talking about Crown of Axis if we haven't mentioned it before. We will be talking about that next week. Thank you to all of our patrons, old and new. We could not do this without you. All right, and if you're at all interested, check out all of the other great shows on the Iconic Production channel. Becca is running a Call of Cthulhu game every Monday night. Our friend Josh is running a 5th edition D&D game every Friday night. And when this episode airs, the first episode of a new Jackals series of one-shots will be going live on Tuesday nights when I'm not running the delightful games on the Ulysses International channel. So check us out. If you like us, follow us on YouTube, follow us on Twitch, follow us on whatever podcast platform you're listening to. And we will talk to you later.
And if you'd like to support the show, you can do so by becoming a patron at patreon.com/iconicpodcast.
Well, you've been listening to the Iconic Podcast.
If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, you can contact us at iconicpodcast@gmail.com or call and leave a voicemail at 720-924-1706.
And be sure to check out iconicpodcast.com for news, updates, and new episodes.
Thanks for listening.